The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Texas show. Hey, do you like to eat nuts? Like super nummy hazelnuts and almonds and filberts and macadamia nuts and Brazil nuts? Right? You like cracking them open and digging out the choicest morsels of delectable nut meats? Because I really don't. Yep, no reason, just not a big nut fan. Never have been. Anyway, here's Mr. Totally Nutty McNutzer himself, Eric Patek.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
Oh, great.
Albin, I don't know what Todd's talking about, but we don't have time to get into that right now. Listen, today is, I believe, Thursday. Did I get that right?
It is. I love Thursday. You know why? Because it's right in front of Friday, and you know what Friday is.
Right in front of Saturday?
Well, the weekend, anyway.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we're almost there.
Okay, so we're sure that tomorrow is Friday. Then almost certainly today is Thursday.
It is.
I know that today's Thursday. And the reason I know is because on Thursdays in the hour that follows this hour, typically we do an encore. We've done in the past that is so wonderful. Mm-hmm. We say, we're going to throw this out there again because I'll bet you a lot of people have missed it. In hour two today, we're talking or we're re-airing my conversation with our friend Lance Wallnau. I won't say anything. Just let people tune in and see what you think. In this hour, in a few minutes, we have on the phone from Merry Old England, Laura Thompson. She is an author. She's written a lot of books. I found a review of a book she did, a biography of Nancy Mitford. Nancy Mitford is one of the celebrated writers of the 20th century, a great comic novelist. But she is as famous or more famous for being one of the six Mitford girls. There were six sisters whose lives you can't even make it up. They were an upper-class British family. The healthiest thing that any of them did was to write books. That's Nancy. The others, they were friends with Hitler. You'll hear about it. Oh, but what a crazy time in history. Laura Thompson will be with us in just a moment. And by the way, Albin, before we forget, tomorrow, which is Friday, we're going to have a conversation with my friend Cal Thomas. We have not had Cal in this studio.
Oh, wow.
I love Cal. He's a dear friend, and he is going to be with us talking about his new book. You didn't know he had a new book? Cal Thomas will be in the studio.
Yeah, interesting title, America's Expiration Date.
Well, his book is a little bit like my book, If You Can Keep It, which is a little bit like our friend Oz Guinness's book, like a number of Oz Guinness's books. Yeah. The one I'm thinking of now is A Free People's Suicide. Listen, if three people like Cal and Oz and I are seeing the same things and many others are seeing the same things, it's probably worth paying attention
to. And by the way, I reviewed A Free People's Suicide for the Washington Times 5 or 6
years
ago.
And we're not just saying this
because
Oz Guinness's son CJ's in the studio.
No.
We're not saying it because CJ's here.
No.
We're just saying it. We just talk about
Oz
Guinness, whether his kids are here or not. We don't care. We love Oz Guinness.
We do.
So I dedicated my book, If You Can Keep It, to Oz, hoping he wouldn't sue me for stealing all his ideas. And so far, So good. Now, Albin,
in
hour two tomorrow, I want to warn people, if you haven't heard this yet, I want to warn people not to miss it. In hour two tomorrow, we're re-airing a conversation I had with Pete and Seth Talbot. That's the father and son team behind Relief Factor, which we advertise in this program. They are now also the father and son team behind a coffee company called Honor Bound Coffee. You may have heard me mention this before, but if you listen tomorrow, you'll hear them tell it's really their life story of how they got involved in what they do. But I just want to say that oftentimes people think that, you know, if I'm really serious about my faith, I should become a minister. Some of the most powerful ministry that's ever happened is in the marketplace. And once again, because CJ's in the room, I'm thinking of Oz Guinness. He always talks about this stuff. You're not meant only to go officially into the ministry. You're meant to minister wherever you are. And Pete and Seth Talbot, in business, in running these companies, they are doing so much. It's amazing. Honor Bound Coffee, which is our new sponsor, and I am asking you to check it out on the web, honorboundcoffee.com. They give, listen to this, sounds like we're making it up.
Right.
They give 100% of their profits to helping military families. Now, if you want to find out the heart behind Pete and Seth Talbot and this company, listen tomorrow. In fact, you don't even have to wait. You can go to our YouTube channel right now. It's the Eric Metaxas Show on YouTube. And you can listen to anything you like. But if you want to hear about Pete and Seth Talbot, you can go to that video and check it out. But they are such wonderful people. And I think when you get to know them, you'll understand this is not a gimmick. They really want to help military families.
And I got to tell you, first of all, my wife and I know your wife and you, we do really love this coffee. I actually get up 10 minutes early now just to make the coffee for Ann and I on days that I'm coming into the studio because I got to get here early.
Yeah.
And on days I'm not coming into the studio, I get up at my regular time but make the coffee.
Well,
and
look,
it's Honor Bound. I'm telling you.
We have to say that Honor Bound Coffee really does give all of their profits to military families. So I was actually worried. I'm not making this up. This is true. I was thinking when I had Pete and Seth Talbot on the program, and again, we're going to air that tomorrow. But when we had him on the program, I just thought, this is such a beautiful idea. I hope I like this coffee because I'm going to be buying coffee probably for decades to come, spending a lot of money on coffee. If I buy Starbucks coffee, they give to progressive causes. And by the way, they are promoting progressive causes in every store. And, you know, it just gets ridiculous. What would it be like if I drink Honor Bound coffee that's doing this amazing thing for military families and I decide, man, I don't like it that much? Well, I am thrilled to report that we absolutely love it. That makes me very happy because I'm going to be drinking this coffee for
same
years.
With us, same
and
with
I
us.
Hope that, well, Pete and Seth Talbot, they said in the program, like, this is like 1%. This is coffee connoisseurs coffee.
Right.
So if you like coffee, if you're fussy about coffee, you probably will love Honor Bound coffee. But as I say, before I even knew that I would love it, I said, this idea is just so beautiful. And you know what it is? If you have a sponsor on the program, it gives you tremendous joy to really believe in what they're doing. They're not just, you know, like a lot of the commercials on this program that I don't know so much about the company. When you know about a company and you know what they're doing, you want them to succeed. So I want you, I hope you will go to honorboundcoffee.com and you'll check it out. They've got this like big special where they're literally losing money. If you buy your first bag of coffee, they give you the second one free. I know for a fact they're losing money on that. So they're doing this to suck you in. They're saying, we know if you buy this coffee, you're going to like it and you're going to buy more coffee. So we're not afraid to give it away for free or to give it away at a loss.
The other
we're
thing
not
I
afraid.
Like, these guys are from Seattle, and everybody knows Seattle's best. Starbucks, all that stuff comes from Seattle. So coffee seems to begin in Seattle. So they know what they're doing.
Yes.
They do.
And again, the website is honorboundcoffee.com. You can't get this anywhere else, certainly not at this point. They're just starting. I hope you will help them to do what they do. It just is crazy that they're giving 100% of their profits to help military families. So my attitude is like, look, if you buy coffee, if you drink coffee, if you know people that drink coffee, why wouldn't you get it from them? Because truly, again, we know the people. This is real. This is not a gimmick. They're
and
not just doing this.
Please mention that you heard about their coffee on the Eric Metaxas show.
And why wouldn't you do that?
Not?
Of course you would do that. But anyway, we're hoping you'll do that. And I want to be more forward sometimes. I think, I shouldn't push my audience. But look, I believe in this so strongly. I will push you. I hope that you will go to honorboundcoffee.com, that you will. And you know, we should be clear. They have decaf. They have regular, which is calf. They have, you can buy beans. You can buy it ground. You can buy it ground this way. You can buy it ground that way. They have light roast, medium roast, dark roast. You get whatever you want. All I can tell you is when you get the first bag, they're losing money on this. So go to honorboundcoffee.com. See what you think. All profits go to help military families. Again, I cannot stress enough how this blesses me that they are a sponsor, a major sponsor now on this program, Honor Bound Coffee, honorboundcoffee.com. When I come back, I'm going to be talking with Laura Thompson from England. We're going to use the telephone. Stick around. I don't know about you folks, but I'm not going to wait for Barry Manilow to begin singing because I want to talk about Nancy Mitford. Some of you are familiar with her. She was an extraordinary writer, and I'm thrilled to say that there is a brand new biography of Nancy Mitford. The title of it is Life in a Cold Climate, Nancy Mitford, the biography. I have the author on the line from London, Laura Thompson. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I just have to say I was thrilled. I think the only reason I can bear to read the New York Times or to pay for it is because every now and again the book review on Sundays will carry a review of a book that I'm interested in, or at least whose author I would love to speak with on my radio program. And I was thrilled to see that there is that this new biography of Nancy Mitford exists. My first question to you, of course, is what led you particularly to write this biography of Nancy Mitford?
Well, it's my first biography. It was published a few years ago over here, in fact. And how wonderful that it's appearing in America.
Yes.
I'm pretty thrilled about that, I might say. When I grew up, I was, had ideas about literature that I've read people like Thomas Hardy and George Eliot and sort of thought that, however wonderful, it must be very, very serious stuff in order to be good. And then I think when I was probably about 15, read The Pursuit of Love by Nancy,
yeah.
And I thought, oh my goodness, this, it can be good and it can also be fun. And that was a bit of a breakthrough for me because she has this extraordinary... I mean, The Pursuit of Love is one of her two sort of acknowledged masterpieces. It was written in 1945, and then there's also Love in a Cold Climate, which was 1949, and those are her two most famous,
yeah,
best novels.
And I'm embarrassed to say I didn't bother to remind myself which of her books I had read. All I know is that a few years ago, I think I was actually in Canada looking for something to read on the airplane, and I grabbed a Nancy Mitford book, and I was simply staggered that I had waited so long in life to acquaint myself with her writing. It is absolutely hilarious and delightful, and she is often confused with any number of her sisters. Tell us, if you would, a little bit about her background, because there were so many of them, and they each distinguished themselves in various ways. So tell us about her sisters, or her family, rather.
Distinguished is an interesting word, because sometimes they did the opposite.
I was just going to say, when I used the word distinguished, I was, I wanted to put it in a different typeface so people could know that I'm saying it with a pinched face as I speak it.
How right you are. But so Nancy was the oldest of six sisters. She was born in 1904. The youngest of them was born in 1920. There was also a brother, Tom, who sort of came in the middle, who the one boy among these six girls, and you would think, my goodness, what sort of a time did he have? But he was actually probably the strongest character of all of them, and probably the only person in the family that everyone wanted his good opinion, wanting to get along with him. And in fact, when he was killed at the end of the Second World War, that more or less ensured that the family would fragment as it had been doing in the years up to the Second World War, for the reasons that are the six sisters all got, to varying degrees, caught up with the extraordinary political situation between the wars, and came to maturity, or maturity, more air quotes, at a time when, you know, the world was sort of becoming so polarized politically and in such a dark and tumultuous way.
Well,
so,
just to cut to the chase for people listening who don't know, Unity Mitford, who obviously was one of Nancy's sisters, was very extremely pro-Nazi. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about her really sad life.
Well, she's pro-Nazi. I mean, she was a good friend of Hitler's. She went out to Munich in 1933, and she and another sister, Diana, who was the kind of family beauty and who was a young married woman, and left her husband in order to set up as the mistress of Oswald Mosley, who was the leader of the British Union of Fascists. And Unity, who was a bit younger than Diana and very much impressed by her, sort of thought, well, I can go one better. She's got the fascist, I'll have, you know, the Nazi. Went out to Germany, met Hitler, and of course quite a lot of the British upper classes were quite pro-Hitler in the years, you know, the mid-1930s. Saw him as a bulwark against communism. And then another sister, Jessica, thought, well, I'll go one better still, and eloped to the Spanish Civil War with a communist, and was a lifelong communist, and in fact moved to America, and her politics kind of, you know, she just became a sort of left-wing activist and a famous writer in America.
Yeah.
Unity shot herself the day that war was declared because she couldn't bear the idea of England and Germany being at war. The bullet lodged in her brain. Hitler got her transported back to England, and she lived a kind of semi-cripple until 1948. So that was there was one sister who didn't get involved at all, Pam, and then there was Deborah, who married the Duke of Devonshire and also took a very apolitical sort of, you know, backed off from the whole thing. And Nancy, who... In a way, Diana was the catalyst for the political sort of affiliations of the sister. Nancy was the catalyst for because of becoming famous as a writer, famous for writing about the family, sort of creating the Mitford mythology, which we read about in The Pursuit of Love, which is not the truth about the family, but catches a kind of essence of the family, which is the other side of the Mitford story. There's the Nancy view, which is sunlit and benevolent and mythologized, and then there's this extraordinary political history that went with them. It is a story unlike any other. It is, you know, to have these six very good-looking girls all sort of in competition with each other at that time when the world was going mad.
And socially very, very prominent.
It's a hell of a story.
Socially very prominent. But before we move on to Nancy, I just have to say you've written a book, a previous book, about the six sisters, haven't you?
Yes, yes.
And
sort of brisk trot through this whole thing, you know, trying to put it in context, trying to sort of trace out, if you like, the family dynamic. Because Nancy, who is really the most intelligent of the sisters by some measure, said, you know, the personal is always political and vice versa. And so, you know, the sort of the dynamic within the family and the rivalries between the girls that also sent them off in these extreme political positions, it is so complex and so interesting because although the positions were so extreme, they were also always rooted in the relationships between the girls.
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing. It's a wonder that a miniseries hasn't been done about their various lives. It seems to me that Netflix might be working on something like that if they're looking for material.
Well, that would be it's The Crown plus, if you like.
You know,
as I said in my book, The Kardashians with red flags and swastikas.
Yeah,
that sounds a bit sort of glib, but they were so famous in the same way that the Kardashians are, in a way, and that was because of Nancy, because she always threw this veil of levity and fun over the whole thing, while at the same time, of course, knowing exactly what was going on and seeing exactly what was going on. In fact, escaping the whole lot of them by moving to France after the war, which enabled her to put the whole thing at arm's length.
And it does seem to me that she dealt with the horror of it, I guess, in humor, that she's clearly working out some of this by writing about it in her arch, hilarious way. We're going to be right back to continue talking with Laura Thompson, who is now in London, talking to us about her book biography of Nancy Mitford. It is titled Life in a Cold Climate. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. We'll be right back.
Put the lock on the door. Just get away where your worries won't find you. If you like, well, I'll tell you more.
Hey there, folks. There are not many radio talk shows that play Petula Clark. I like to think that I'm unique in this. I'm speaking right now to the author of Life in a Cold Climate, a biography of the great writer Nancy Mitford, Laura Thompson. Laura, let me ask you before we go on. We were just briefly mentioning The Crown and how I was saying that the Mitford sisters and their lives would make a glorious Netflix series. I almost wonder if they aren't already working on it, because it would be such rich, such a rich storyline, so many characters that are fascinating. And of course, you write about them. But I have to ask you, in watching The Crown, it was I was reminded of King Edward, who abdicated, that he had something like Nazi sympathies, or that he had made overtures to the Nazis. And as I watched it, I wasn't quite sure whether it was historically accurate. Do you have any knowledge of whether he did the things that they say he did? I don't even know that you're familiar with The Crown as I am, but I just thought I would ask you, since you're familiar with this period.
Yes, I don't have Netflix because I would never do any work. but if they said he had Nazi affiliations, they were absolutely right. I mean, there is a school of thought that Baldwin, the prime minister at the time, you know, wanted him to abdicate because they thought he would be such a liability. And there's certainly photographs of him with the Nazi high command. But as Nancy said, because she turned down an invitation to the von Ribbentrop's embassy in London, in fact, her husband answered it declining in, he answered it in Yiddish, which was a nice touch.
Oh,
but
brilliant.
She said, you know, she said everybody went to that embassy. Even if they deny it now, she was talking in the 1960s, everybody went. There was something called the Anglo-German Fellowship or something like that, Lord Londonderry. And, of course, her father, Lord Reedsdale, who, after the war broke out, was denounced as a German sympathizer, which was very painful for him, because what he'd really done was go out to Germany to try and keep tabs on unity. And they'd all more or less met Hitler, not Nancy, not Jessica, all the others met Hitler in the scheme of things, because unity was kind of, you know, in his court. It's sort of beyond belief, and yet when you write about it, you have to make it, you have to show how it actually could have happened. But they did. Yes, they all knew Hitler, and he was amazingly popular within a certain faction of the British upper classes.
What do you suppose?
Partly fear of communism.
What do you
have to say?
I was going to say, what do you suppose accounts for that? In other words, I would guess that many of them were largely ignorant of the horrors to come, even the horrors that had already been perpetrated. Because you can ask the same thing about literary figures like Lillian Hellman. Being pro-Stalin, you just can't imagine how these intelligent people possibly could have been so stupid. It seems inconceivable, and I'm always fascinated. So in this case as well, I'm fascinated. Why did the British upper classes seem to turn a blind eye to the horrors of the Nazis, especially early on?
Well, I think a lot of it was fear of communism because, I mean, communism at that point was very popular here. Of course, a lot of the literati and what have you had supported the Spanish Civil War, and some of them had gone out to fight. The whole thing had been raised to a sort of fever pitch.
Yeah.
But there was, and Mosley, you know, who married Diana Mitford. He became a pariah, and he was, of course, imprisoned during the Second World War, as was Diana. But before that, he was quite a legitimate figure. He was regarded as, you know, offering a kind of politics that would replace the tired old conservative Labour. It's not so unlike today, but one hopes the stakes aren't as high now. But that drift toward extremism, you know, when I wrote the first book, it seemed like a million miles away. And then when I wrote the second book, not so much. But within the Mitford family, there'd been a German, the grandfather and then the Wagner family and et cetera, et cetera. There were kind of links. But Nancy was having none of it. And in a way, her passion for France, her love of France, was genuine, but it was also a way of saying to her family, I'm not like you, I don't like Nazis, you know? Because, again, everything was through that prism of the political extremist times.
Well, that's what's so strange. I mean, if you're given a choice between, this Soviet communism and anything else, most people would pick anything else, except in this case, the anything else happened to be the Nazis. And so it must have been tremendously confusing, which makes, you know, Churchill's ability to see the evil of Hitler all the more prescient, because he was surrounded by people who either didn't see it or didn't want to see it. And listen, when I think that, we had to make this pact with Stalin, and that we had to give over all of Eastern Europe, you sometimes wonder, you know, what we won. It's horrific to think about. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Laura Thompson, who's the author of a biography of Nancy Mitford titled Life in a Cold Climate. Don't go away. Folks, that's ABBA. I'm Eric Metaxas, and I'm talking to Laura Thompson in London by phone. Laura, it seems that every time I find a wonderful book by an English author, we have to do it by phone. If you ever come to New York for any reason, I'd love to have you in studio to continue the conversation. I don't know if coming to New York appeals to you, but in case you ever make the trip, it would be fun.
Are you kidding? Coming to New York appeals to me more than anything, Eric, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's funny. I spoke to Andrew Roberts on this program about his Churchill biography. Then I realized he was in New York a little while ago. I got to meet him in person. I thought, darn it, I wish I would have known. It would be fun to have him in studio. Sonia Purnell, whose work you may know, she was also she was here in the studio. But I say that because it would be it'd be fun to continue the conversation in person. Nonetheless, we have you on the phone from London. Thank you. And I want to talk to you more about your book, Life in a Cold Climate. Nancy Mitford, all I can say is that being a writer myself, I was so taken with her ability to write a very fun novels. Her fiction is just effervescent. Did she want to be a writer? What is her story? How did she come to write these extraordinary books?
I'm so glad you love them. I really am, because I do think she is the most marvelous writer. And oddly enough, when I wrote the book, her stock was not that high. It's kind of, I think her peculiar light genius has become more, you know, valued as time has gone on. She didn't really intend to be a writer. Sometimes one's life sort of works itself out without you being aware of how, and
Correct.
Then you realize it has actually taken you to the right place. I mean, she came from both her grandfathers were literary men. One of them started Vanity Fair, in fact, and another one was an MP and wrote books and so on. But her family, the sisters, were famously not educated. That's part of the joke in The Pursuit of Love, that they're all, you know, they terrorized their governesses, and they never went to school apart from Unity, who was asked to leave, as her mother put it, meaning expelled. They were kind of self-taught, and that sent them in the various directions that, you know, one might say insufficient discipline of the mind, or in Nancy's case, the productiveness of extreme boredom and being left with a lot of people who you have to amuse and sort of be competitive with. And what also happened was that through her brother, Tom, who was, of course, educated, went to Eton, and was a very clever man, she met lots of interesting people who were his contemporaries. They were a fantastic generation. People like Evelyn Waugh, Harold Acton, John Betjeman. You know, they were a marvelous generation, and they adored Nancy. Well, because they had to be amusing. They didn't have television. They didn't have Netflix. They didn't have phones. They had to sort of entertain each other. And this lot, this sort of post-World War I generation who'd escaped the trenches by the skin of their teeth, they did have a peculiar effervescence, as you say. They did have a desire to enjoy youth, make the most of youth, be amusing. They were what were called the bright young things. And Nancy, like Evelyn Waugh, was kind of on the intelligent fringes of that party-going mania of the 20s. Evelyn wrote about it. Nancy started off writing about it, probably in imitation of Evelyn. He was what she called cher maître. She, you know, they were good friends. They wrote wonderful letters to each other. And she slightly went in his footsteps at the start. Her first book was called Highland Fling, published when she was 25. It's not great, but my goodness, I'd like to have written it when I was 25.
Yeah.
And it's very of the time. It's a bright young thing novel.
Yeah, that's the one that I didn't. That's the one that I didn't finish, and it's not. It's certainly not bad, but it can't compare to some of her masterpieces.
Well, she was finding her way, as you say. I mean, I probably wouldn't have finished it. I had to.
Yeah,
but it's. She was finding her way, and how she found her way was she found her voice, and her voice, as clearly you feel the same way, her voice is incomparable, because it's honest, it has that strange thing called charm, and it has a kind of almost like a child's perceptiveness.
Yeah.
It is so on the money.
Yeah.
As to be funny in itself, because it's so accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine that the biggest market for your biography is people who love her fiction. Now, she did write books beyond the novels that she wrote. Tell us about that.
Yeah, she was a historical biographer. Well, she'd kind of run out of subjects. You know, she did have family, and she did Love in a Cold Climate, which is hilarious and sort of thing she knew about. And then she did The Blessing, which I think is undervalued, which is about French society and beautifully cynical. Gosh, it's cynical, but it's glorious. But she moved into, she did Madame de Pompadour, which seemed like a marvelous subject for her, because when she moved to France, and of course, she fell in love with a Frenchman, and the general view is, oh, she went to France because she was chasing after this man. Little bit demeaning to her, I think. I think she went to France because she knew that there would be a wonderful new life for her in France. Mm. She was 40, which then was definitely middle age, but she had this wonderful, almost girlish sort of joie de vivre about her, and she had the most fantastic, happy, glorious time in the sort of first 15 years of her life in France. And it wasn't just because of the man, it was because of just life itself. And her books became French, France-centric, if you like. So she did Pompadour, she did Voltaire, she did Louis XIV, which sold insane numbers of copies, because by then she'd become, you know, a celebrity writer, unquestionably. And then her last book was, in fact, Frederick the Great, and that was when she was dying very painfully of cancer.
Forgive me,
about Frederick the Great, and I can't say how much I admire her for that.
Forgive me, Laura. We're going to go to a break here. We'll be right back for a final segment with Laura Thompson. The book is Life in a Cold Climate.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without crying. Now I want to understand.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Laura Thompson, the author of a biography of Nancy Mitford, the great Nancy Mitford. The book, the biography is called Life in a Cold Climate. Laura, I'm sorry, we just have a few minutes left. Let me ask you, what year did Nancy Mitford go to France? Was it before the end of the war?
No, it was just after the end of the war, and it sort of coincided with Pursuit of Love coming out. And she said, I sat under a shower of gold. She'd never had money because the father squandered everything through just lack of business brain, sold acres of land. Oh, my goodness, it's terrible. And she really was quite poor. She married a poor man and a wastrel, really, which was awful. And then she wrote The Pursuit of Love, and it completely changed her life at the age of 40. And she could afford to live in Paris. She lived in a charming flat in Paris. And, of course, she had her man, Gaston Paulewski, who'd been sort of General de Gaulle's right-hand man during the war when the Free French were in London, and Nancy met him then. And everything changed for her. That's why she always said, oh, how lovely to be heavenly middle age. because middle age to her was when life sort of fell into place. And also leaving England, I can kind of understand that. She flowered away from England. Her Englishness flowered away from England. Mm. She sort of understood it better.
Yeah. Well, there's England and then there's England. The England of the Mitford sisters is... It's glamorous and in some ways horrifying to have been a part of that and to watch your sisters go fascist and one of them try to blow her brains out. It's something out of a novel, and yet, of course, it all happened. When did Nancy Mitford pass away?
1973. She would have been a wonderful old lady. But she died at age 68. She'd had the most terrible, terrible last 4 years of her life. I was just reading it in my book, and I shouldn't say this about my own book, but it sort of made me cry just reading it. Undiagnosed cancer, and her bravery. She was such a brave woman. And, you know, her sister Diana said to me, oh, Nancy had such an unhappy life, you know, no husband who ever loved her, no children, and then this awful death and all that. And Well, they were very rivalrous with each other, Diana and Nancy, and I don't utterly buy it. Her death was awful, but that's separate. You can't do anything about, you know, falling ill.
Yeah.
That happens to the best of us.
We just have a moment.
Her life was extraordinary, and that spirit of hers comes across in her wonderful novels.
We just have a moment left, I'm sorry to say a minute, but did you speak in person with her two younger sisters?
I spoke to Diana and Deborah. They were the two left. And that was an experience.
And when was that?
Diana, she was so notorious and so lovely, so wonderful.
Yeah.
I can't tell you her charm. The Mitford charm was something else. To experience it and to have her sitting there telling me about Hitler. Of course, it was interesting to meet Hitler. I'd be a liar. They have this self confidence. The self-confidence of the aristocracy is not necessarily a malign thing, but it's something that is hard to understand. And they all had it, but Nancy managed to translate it into something saleable in her books.
I'm so sorry we're out of time. I really do have to say, if you find your way popping across the pond, as you might put it, I would just love to have you in the studio. Congratulations on the publication of Life in a Cold Climate here in America. I hope it will find many readers. Thank you so much, Laura Thompson.